What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Nights at the Round Table. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be talking about facing your fears today and overcoming them. All those fears that keep you from doing what you know you're supposed to be doing, whether it's a calling, whether it's a dream, whatever it is. We're going to be breaking down the fears, why we have them, how to get over them. If you stay all the way to the end of the episode, you hear my new song, Can You Stand the Pressure, featuring my homeboy, Sam Tenez. We love you guys so much. Pull up a chair. You're all invited. Here's Nights at the Round Table. And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Round Table. It's your boy, Man Weezy, and my beautiful queen, Angela. We got Be Real over there. Yeah. We're going to have a good time tonight. What are we drinking?
Well, we've done 19 crimes already.
Our fave.
But it's so good, we're doing it again.
Our fave.
19 crimes, you guys. This is 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon.
Are we doing different ones, though, even though it's 19 crimes?
Yeah, there are different ones, but honestly, I don't remember which one we did last time. So, you guys, go check out 19 Crimes because we absolutely love it. It's reasonably priced.
Yeah.
So it's not like one of those crazy bottles that you have to like wait for a special occasion. Like you can just drink this because it's Tuesday. And there's a fun app that goes with it. And these guys talk and they tell their story of why they were a criminal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's super cool. So anyways, cheers,
we should
you guys.
We should do a pot on them one time.
19 Crimes.
Let's get it. Ah, thank you, Crimes. Look, this episode we're going to get into, I think it's going to be a little bit vulnerable because we're dealing with how to overcome fear.
And when are we not vulnerable on this part?
But this time, I mean, we're going to talk about stuff that, you know, some of it is weird. I know one of mine is weird. One of my fears is weird and people always laugh when I say it. But fear is like one of those things you don't ever want to let people know about because it's kind of embarrassing.
Is that's honestly part of the deepest part of you, you know? And so showing someone or even voicing it to people who don't even know of like, hey, this is the deepest part of me, because I think those fears share more of the reality of your situation more than your bio does.
Yeah.
You know, because I think your fears are actually a truer extension of who you are.
I agree.
Shoot. Also, I think sometimes people can't really identify their fears, not that they can't identify their fear, but they may not know that this certain fear is operating in their life. And I think you have to be a very self-aware person to identify your fears, your triggers, your anxieties, your like, whatever causes this. I think you have to be very self-aware to identify those things. So if anything, this could be a good exercise for people to look within themselves and see what's kind of, you know, running the ship there.
So, okay. So what is a good exercise for them? Because if you're listening right now and we're in, and you would like to establish at least a beginning of understanding of being self-aware, do you have any good practices that people can do?
Well, I mean, if we just name some of our fears right now, like a couple big ones. And
I'm talking about for them to like lower their guard and be open to maybe thinking and, you know, acknowledging the fear inside.
Well, that's why I was going to say, if we take a couple, you say a couple fears, I say a couple fears, and maybe like an example of what that fear looks like in your life, then I think people will hear that and be able to.
Oh, well, we're going to do that then. That's exactly what we're going to do.
I think another way for me, I think one of the first things that I learned kind of what my fears were is one, you're like exposed to that stuff as a kid. But then two, once you start to get a little bit older, you start to see fears in other people's lives around you. You know how sometimes like you could see stuff in other people that you just can't see in yourself because you lack the awareness. And you start to notice signs like that. Like you'll look at your mom and you're like, oh my God, like I am like my mom in that way. Or maybe his grandfather or whatever, some figure in your life. And you start to see, oh, I'm just like that. And that's one of my fears. I've never talked to my dad about this actually. But I think one of my fears, my greatest fears, is his greatest fear, because I first learned it in the home, you know? And so it's kind of one of those things that's been passed down, unfortunately, and that I'm working through now.
What is that fear?
It's a fear of being broke, man. We've talked a little bit about on the money podcast about that kind of just that poverty mindset.
Yeah.
You know, there's a legit fear of going broke. So both of my parents, come from a low socioeconomic class. You know, my dad grew up in West Oakland. My mom grew up in Stockton, California, you know, and they both grew up having nothing, you know, so they both came from nothing. So the fact that I was growing up as the poor family in the middle class neighborhood is a win. You know, the fact that they even got up out of the hood, beat the odds, beat the statistics. And so, but there was always this sense of like, well, this could all go tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and I think even with that, it's like, you just can't be generous at all, you know? And I think in that sense too, like you're holding on to everything so tight.
Yeah.
You know, because you're like, man, I could lose this, you know? And I've found that like legit to be a fear in my life, because there's been a couple times where I have been broke and that feeling, it haunts you.
Yeah.
You know, like you're legit feeling like even when I'm doing good, oh, it's going to go bad. It's going to go bad.
And
Dude, and it's funny because it's like, you know, Maddie and I, we're doing well now. But again, it's the same fear, like the people I'll see tweets or whatever. And it's like, I got $4 in my bank account or something. And I'm like, I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like, what were we just talking about? That we saw somebody, because going broke is one of my top fears as well. And we were talking about somebody, your Uber driver.
Oh, yeah.
Who was telling you this story that they were doing well. They saved. They had backup savings on their savings.
They have insurance, like, supplemental insurance. And then his wife has a stroke. And she's been out of work for 4 years because she had to go through therapy and relearn some things. They had to move to be closer to family so family could help. And he was saying, he's like, and we have insurance. We have really good insurance and we have supplemental insurance. But I still have to drive Uber 2 times a week to make it work, you know.
And that's crazy scary, because that's something that I tell Ange all the time. I'm like, babe, if something ever happens, like, we don't know. Like, we don't have long money. Like, we have something. But long money is like the Gates or, like, you know, Jobs. It's like those people who are like, these people ain't going broke for generations. Like, they don't have to worry about medical bills or nothing like that. Like, for most people in America, one bad accident or one bad hospital stay and you're bankrupt.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like one of those things that's incredibly scary. And for me, like you, it was my mom. My mom taught it, being broke to me in the weirdest way. It was the AC. She wouldn't put the AC below 78. Damn it, Mom. To this day, we got them a house and they still, like, they're not having to like pay anything, like what they don't even have to pay. They do what they want. And to this day, I'll go back to the house and it's just, that's at 78 degrees. And I'm like, Mom, why you keep acting like you're broke, like you're poor? I don't understand.
I remember when we first got married, Manny would not buy name brand groceries of anything.
Oh, yeah. No, because I came out of college.
Windex was pretend Windex. It was just blue spray or whatever. And then like Lucky Stars cereal, just no name brand anything. And I'd be like, babe, like, we're doing okay. You could,
it wasn't my fault. When we were in Bible college, we were poor as hell. Like, we were poor.
And now look at the monster I created.
Look
at the monster I created with his
look at these
diamonds two chains over here.
Babe, little do you know, gold is an investment. When all the money's gone, this is all we gonna have. No, my mom wouldn't set it below 78, and the water. To this day, I don't take showers longer than 5 minutes when I'm at somebody else's house. To
also,
this day.
Another thing that your mom taught both of us, I remember the first time she came to visit us at the house, she cut up all my sponges.
Oh, I'm putting.
She cut my sponges in half so bit. That you
so
use
they'll
them.
Last
they'll last longer. Use little pieces at a time.
Itty bitty.
Yo, but I think that's one of those things of, if you've always had money, you don't know. I don't think you know what it feels like. You don't know what it feels like to not have anything.
To fear being broke.
It's interesting because I'm around with my job and the clientele I'm around a lot of kids who are the product of generational wealth. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's like one thing for your parents to have a nice home, you know, you got their careers or whatever, but it's a whole nother thing. Like,
you're around kids who are post-mating food to the basketball
game, who are just Ubering everywhere, and kids who will just like leave Gucci sweaters in the lost and found, and just like, this is a legit thing. Like, you have, there's literally no fear, you know, of like losing anything, you know? And it's funny because I think coming from the mindset of like, yo, I'm afraid to go broke, you do all those kind of dumb signs to show that you're not broke.
Yeah.
Which just reinforces the fact that you're not really rich.
No. And you have a poor person mentality.
And you have a poor person mentality. You know, so for a while I was caught up in like, ooh, what am I wearing? I'm trying to like front like I got more money than I really do, because deep down inside I'm just scared you're going to see that I'm broke. Mm. Trying to impress other broke people, you know, because rich people who really got it, they don't need to flaunt it. You
they
know?
Don't. I learned that when I came to LA. I'm like, rich people dress poor. Poor people dress rich. Or you can tell who comes from money, because you'll be like, looking like dude just, you know,
Adam
Vans
Sandler.
And
on the red carpet, right? Every Adam time Sandler.
We see, Adam Sandler in shorts and t-shirt, you know, and the kids are just wearing Vans and torn up jeans with a t-shirt. You're like, oh, whatever. And then they get into the newest Range Rover and they're driving away. I'm like, oh, they just got money. And it's almost not cool to show people that you have money nowadays. Mm. Like in every sense of the word of it, like the grunge, like low key stuff is actually more cool. The only people that really do it is like the rappers. And I think it's because we come from nothing. Like when you have nothing, you really want to floss. And there's like this, I feel like at least with me, there's this circle that I've been on where when I first came into some money, I went and I bought everything. And then I was like, oh man, this is stupid. And now I'm coming off on, what do I really love? Like, what do I really love? These are the things that I'm going to invest in. And for me right now, it's real estate and it's, you know, my cars or whatever. Stuff that I thoroughly enjoy, and the clothes stuff is going farther and farther behind, you know? And I think that fear of going broke is, it pushes you to... It doesn't go away even when you do get money, because it's no longer about the number in the account. It's now this mindset that you have that you can't get rid of. It's like you don't have money and then you're like, man, I wish I'll have money. Then you get money and you're like, oh man, I wish I don't lose it. And it's this constant thing that you tell yourself of, you're just scared.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that you both are men? Possibly like the provider mentality. Not to say that I don't have a fear. I don't have like an active fear of going broke. It's not something that fuels me and motivates my decision-making. It's not something I often think of. But if the thought comes into my mind, like, oh, what if I tweet something controversial and then all of a sudden everybody hates me and I have no more shows and I get fired from everything and we have no money and then we lose everything. Like I can spiral real quick, and then as soon as it happened, it's gone and I don't think about it again. So it's not an active
fear
in my life.
I have a worst case scenario plan. So where we are.
If that happens?
Yeah.
If I tweet something awful?
Yeah. No.
He's got contingency
plan. I have a complete contingency plan.
You have my publicist statement ready to go.
It's not even a statement.
My apology.
We have amassed a certain amount of properties that I'm like, okay, this is the amount of money that will come in if we don't make any more money. We're just going to have to move to a smaller house, but we'll have this much money coming in. So we are straight.
The fact that you have thought this through that far shows like the different drive of that fear. But I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the fact that you're men and the provider mentality.
Yeah. You know, because I think, you know, Maddie doesn't share that same fear. Mm-hmm. Like even times where it's been a little bit lower and I'm stressing out about it and I'm trying to pick up more clients to train and all this sorts of stuff and to hustle or whatever. Cause that's like, if I'm being honest, I think that's like the main driver behind my hustle and my go get. Mm. It's like, I don't want to not make it here.
Yeah.
You know? And I think the other thing too was, this is me being vulnerable right now. I think I looked at and I'm grateful for everything that my dad did and provided for our family. But I just felt like I want a better life.
Yeah.
And I don't want my finances to be so teeter-totter.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of the fear of like it being so high and low all the time that I go so hard now.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, this is the hardest I've ever gone in my life. Like 2019, I mean, for probably a little bit half of the year, I'm working like 12, 13 hour days.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like hustling my ass off. You know what I'm saying? All for this, I don't want to be broke.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to set myself up for the long game too, you know, because Maddie and I were talking about in a couple of years having children.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, it's already expensive for us to live, but it's going to be so expensive to have children.
Yeah.
Plus the life that I want to give them. I'm like, I got to go hard now.
Yeah. You think it's, and it is a little different because Maddie comes from a different situation too.
Yeah.
Because Maddie's never had to worry about where money's going to come from either. So it definitely is. I don't think it's as much men as it's just as much as how you grew up and the thoughts that you keep to yourself. Because I was telling you the other day, I was like, I wonder if my parents are sad. I wonder if it affects them that they're not leaving us anything. They're not going to leave us a single thing.
That's
I wonder if they're okay with just being proud of us. Like,
that's interesting.
I raised my kids and they're healthy and they're good and I did everything I can for them. Or do they think I'm going to die and I'm not leaving them a single thing? I'm not leaving them a house. I'm not leaving them a car. I'm not leaving them any money. I've lived 60 something years and I have literally nothing to show for it.
I wonder if they think that. Me personally, like hearing that, my honest response, like if your parents were to say that to us or my mom, my immediate response is, I don't need anything. Like our memories are like, those are the things that matter. And even with like my Thea Mary is going to be 100 this year.
That's crazy.
100 years old. And I was helping her go through her will, right? She had no kids. Her and my Theo Mike had no kids at all. And I am not in this will. And I do not need to be in the will. And I do not want to be in the will. I don't need her house. I don't need her savings account. I don't need any of that stuff. But what I did want from her was like this photo of her and my Theo Mike when they were younger and her stories, which is why I videotaped her telling her life story multiple times in case I lost it. And like that's what I want from her, is just like her story and her memory. And like, that's honestly what to me matters. But yes, I'm sure it would be nice, like if we had kids, to leave them more than memories, to leave them.
Well, because I think that's what every parent, and forgive me if I'm being aloof, but because I'm not a parent, but even biblically speaking, it talks about being blessed enough to leave an inheritance for your for your next generation. Like that's a thing. Like I feel like most parents think I need to set my kids up with something. And that's why it hit me, because, you know, my parents have made, I value my parents so much because they have given me more than I ever could need. They've given me the mentality that I have, the way that I act, my work ethic. They've given me that. So I don't ever think of, man, I wish my parents would have gave me more. But what I do think is, you know, that has to be a thought in a parent's mind. Like, what am I leaving? How am I giving them a leg up on moving forward, you know? Mm-hmm. But my hope is that, and I'm going to ask my parents next time we're there. I'm going to ask them straight up because I would like to know what they think.
That if they're sad, they're not leaving you nothing?
Yeah, I want to ask them. Because I remember last time they were in Thanksgiving. Remember mom cried? Because she was so like affected by how well we're doing. Mm-hmm. She couldn't even answer her thankfuls. She couldn't, because we usually go around and we do the thankfuls.
Yeah.
And she couldn't answer it because she was just like, you guys are doing so well. Hmm. Never in their wildest dreams would they have thought that their son and their daughter-in-law would be doing so well. Ever. Because what we have now is more than they've ever had, ever in their life. Mm-hmm. And the way we live our life is not even fathomable for them. Hmm. So I know there's a sense of pride. So maybe it is like a feeling of like, I can die at peace now knowing that my son doesn't need anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope that's what it is. But I'm going to ask them though.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would hope my parents feel the same way.
You should ask.
Look at me and feel like, okay, my job is done.
Like I don't have to worry about this one. You know, I don't have to worry about this one. What's another fear?
For me, my biggest fear that... I don't want to say runs my life because no fear runs my life, but it peaks its head in my life.
All up in it.
Constantly.
Get out.
The fear of death. And I think it manifests itself in different ways. This is what I've been working on with my therapist is one, I've just started to talk about the fear of death that I have in my stand-up where I share the story of when I thought you died and I walk through that whole story. But in actuality, like I got an emotional support animal for my anxieties and my fear of death. And then now I'm just afraid that my emotional support animal is going to die. Like, what the heck? And like, I was explaining to my therapist and she's like trying to like take me back. Like, was there something in your life? Do you remember when this happened? I was like, well, my parents got divorced when I was 8. And she's like, well, that could be it. And I was like, no, but I remember from even preschool, my mom dropping me off in preschool. And I remember them having to call her to come back and pick me up because I was just crying because I didn't want to be away from her. And I always thought she was going to die. So I did not want her to leave me. And we started like going down, you know, deeper into the shells. And I had this one memory of I was so young that I was in a crib. And I have the memory in my mind of waking up crying for my mom and she doesn't come in like she typically does. And I'm crying and the more she's not coming in, I'm getting more frantic and crying more and screaming and losing it. And then finally I see my mom out the window walk up the front door because she had dropped off my sister at school next door. And I was asleep, so she left me home and then came back in and didn't realize I was going to wake up before she got back. Like, it was that simple thing. And from what my therapist is teaching me, like, something as simple as that could register in my body. And my body now hold that as this memory is tied to this emotion. And it's really a fear of abandonment. Mm. So it's a fear of abandonment and it has to do with like death. And now I think my mom's going to die. I think my husband's going to die. If you get to the end of that, it's I'm going to be alone. They're not going to be there.
Wow.
So it's fear of death, fear of abandonment, fear of being alone, I guess.
Man, I don't ever think about death enough to...
I don't ever think about you dying. Just if you do, you do. You know
no,
what I mean?
Because here's what I've noticed. I plan for everything. If I die, obviously I don't got to plan for anything. You'll go on and you'll be fine.
do your thing.
Yeah, you'll go do your thing.
Babe, that's not true. Who's going to pick out my outfit?
I'm just saying, though, you can, you know, whatever. You'll be fine. If you were to die, I have a plan. So I'm not worried about how... like what I'm going to do in this world. Like the plan is set. If my wife dies, I know what I'm doing. It's already set. I don't know what will happen if you die. And I don't know what will happen to me emotionally. And I thought about that the other day because I always talk about it. I'm always like, if Anne dies, I know what I'm doing. I'm good. Don't worry about it. In the sense of like...
financially.
Just life. I know where I'm going to move. I know what I'm going to do. I know all the stuff that most people be like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like I know all that stuff.
Well, you know your plan right now,
right.
And then who knows? The sorrow and agony
well, this
of me
is what
being
I'm
dead
saying.
Could alter that.
This is what I'm saying. I don't access those emotions right now. Like, I don't feel those emotions right now. My fear is I'm such an emotional person, I don't know how I will react when that happens or if that happens.
That's interesting. Is it because I'm an actor or something? Because I can daydream it and get myself to the point of crying. And
I can.
And all of a sudden, I'm already at your funeral and I'm crying.
I don't know. I mean, I try to get there. Don't get me wrong. I try. Like the other day, I was trying.
I tried.
I wanna,
why were you trying?
Well, because I want to know that I'm not a cyborg, you know? I'm like,
but you're not. Like, we know that of all of us, I'm the cyborg.
I will for sure be sad. Yeah. But at the same time, if we believe what we believe, you dying, going to a better place, like, it's cool. You're cool. That's how I want you to think of me. That's why when people be like,
for sure not.
If I die, you know, and people are like, how long should you be single before you, you know, if your other died? I'm like, it's the second you feel good, go. I don't care if it's a month later. I don't care if it's 2 months later. Do not mourn for me. Keep a picture, whatever. Talk
later.
About me fondly.
I told Manny if he starts dating right away after my death, I will haunt him. I will haunt him.
I don't want to have a hoe season.
My friend was telling me she was going into surgery and she was like, okay, if I die, these are my wishes. You have to communicate them to everyone. Tell Dave that, oops, I said his name, but you don't know the wife's name. Tell Dave that I want him to move on and find someone and be happy, but only 3 years after I've died.
I never get that. I don't ever do that.
Oh, like, and she better not be hotter than me. That was.
I'm like, correct all the mistakes that you found in me. If there's anything that you're annoyed with, try to correct it.
You know, it's interesting about the fear of being abandoned. I think because one of my other fears is the fear of losing Maddie.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of the sense of one, like our marriage crumbling,
right?
Because I F it up somehow without mm-hmm. me even like intentionally trying to, you know, mm-hmm. in the same mm-hmm. way, like it's not really a huge fear of mine, but the fear of being framed, you know, of like, I didn't really do it, but I got screwed. Now here I'm behind bars. But fear of Maddie, like in losing that, like someday her waking up and feeling like, yeah, you know what? I've been bamboozled. You're not all what I hoped you'd be, you know? And I'm just kind of bored, honestly. Like, you're lame. So I'm going to go, like, try somewhere else, you know? And that's, like, a legitimate fear of mine.
Really?
Like, we are now 3 years in. So for the first probably, I'd say, like, 2 years. Like, there'd just be random moments where, like, we're good. Everything's good. We're not in any argument or dispute or anything. And I'd just be like, hey, are we good?
Yeah.
Aww. And it was like really this fear of like, hey, if there's anything like going on in you, like, please just let me know, because it's this fear of like, yo, I might lose you.
Yeah. Where do you think that comes from?
It's a little bit of fear of being abandoned. Like, it's a fear of being alone. Like, I think because I remember what it was like before I found her. Just the feeling, like, I don't remember being single now at this point in my life, but I remember the feeling of not having someone that you, like, really connect to, that you get to, like, share your life with. And I just remember how lonely those moments were. And there was a moment years ago, and it was weird. It registered something in me like this. This was down when we were still living here in Altadena, just outside Pasadena. And I'm probably 6 or 7 years old. We're going to this big church, which church you went to for a while. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the Sundays, there was like a ton of people in there. We're like in our revival times. And I remember it was a Sunday morning and we're getting ready to leave church and I can't find my parents anywhere. And there was all these people and I'm tiny. So I'm like trying to see over them and I can't find my parents anywhere. And it got to the point where it was a decent amount of time and I just start crying because I felt like my parents left without me. Like, they forgot about me, you know? And eventually, you know, obviously my parents come, and I don't know how much time actually, like, elapsed there, but it felt like it was, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it put this weird fear in me for the longest time where I thought, like, they're going to leave me. They're going to leave me. Like, I'm going to be all by myself. I'm going to have to take care of me. They're supposed to take care of me. And it started manifesting in crazy ways because I remember when I was a kid, I'd always go check on in their room to make sure that they were still there.
Aww.
I remember one time, this is right when I was like using the bathroom on my own for like the most part. And I was in the bathroom. My dad was sitting just outside of the bathroom. It was just a one stall, closed the door. And I'm going pee. And all of a sudden I had this panicky moment where I'm like, oh shit, my dad probably left me. Like, he might've forgotten about me. So my pants are still down. I don't even pull my pants up. And I go out and I open the door and I'm like checking. And he's like, son, like, go back in. I'm good. You're good. You know, my pee-pee out and everything. And I just remember, like, there were so many moments like that.
And you were 17.
Yeah, this was like last year. We were at Bloomies, you know. And I was just like, man, I want to make sure my dad is here. And it's crazy because especially, too, when I was a kid, growing up as a church kid, we had the whole Left Behind series. You know?
And I
think that's what it was. It all comes back to Left Behind.
It's probably done more damage than good, at least in my life. And I remember being so scared that Jesus was going to come back and he was going to forget about me.
Oh, wow. Aww.
And I literally thought, like, you know, my parents are for sure saved. So they're getting raptured up. Brittany, too, because she's got such a pure heart, my baby sister. And I'm thinking, I am going to get left behind, you know? And it's crazy because whether it's Jesus, whether it's my parents, there was a legit fear of being abandoned.
Man.
Like, I was going to get forgotten.
That alone, you know what? Let me stop. You know how I was saying that I can't picture it or I can't feel it? Here's how I know I'm full of crap. Because this just...
Everybody record this.
This is what just hit me. There have been a couple of times, even in our marriage, where I do something stupid and I'm like, oh, I'm in trouble. Like, I'm in trouble. She's going to be so mad. What if she bounces? And it hits me so hard that I literally, I'm immobilized. Like, I cannot function because of this looming fear of her being so mad at me or being whatever, that she just leaves, you know? And it's crippling. Like, I don't enjoy anything. I can't see anything nice. I am literally just a wretch. It's happened a couple times. Only a couple times. It's not been a lot. But twice. I remember how deep it felt. And I'm like, I didn't even want to like keep going with life. Not that I was suicidal, but I just felt like life no longer had taste. And that was just from disappointing you. So I know that if I lost you, yeah. I may be like, oh, right yeah. now. Then but I know it would hit me so hard mm-hmm. that I think I would be immobilized for a good minute.
Yeah, you'd feel the actual magnitude.
Oh, the weight.
This, yeah.
Because you take advantage of it. I really do feel like we take advantage of it. We're with each other every day. And we were just talking about this today. We can point out our annoyances. We can for sure tell you what pisses us off about each other or gets us annoyed or whatever. And then we're reluctant to talk about the good things or quickly because it's funner to be like, yeah, but he's like this. But I feel like we're reminded every day, and it's easy to get on each other's nerves, that you miss out on how much of a part of your life that your other is. Mm. And if you lost it, it'd be like, oh, I really had a good thing.
It's funny because like if we're in an argument or something and then Manny leaves the house, I'm always like, oh, man, like what if he dies while he's out there? But I still want to be mad, but now I have to be worried.
You should be.
I know. So I have to switch it.
Switch it up. Love me and miss me.
Let go of my anger.
One of, Brandon mentioned this, one my legit, and I don't know why this has happened. It's been recent. But my legit fear is ending up in prison for wrong reasons, like wrongly accused. And I keep watching these damn shows, of kids getting thrown in and they're in there for 20, 30 years and they didn't even do nothing. And they're finally getting released 20 or 30 years later. And I'm like, man, I know what prison's like. I don't want to go in. Like, I'm not going to last, you know? I'd be one of that guy that kills himself. So you don't know
what prison's like firsthand.
I've done ministry in prison multiple times. So I have.
Oh, but I was trying to clarify for people that you haven't been to prison.
I have not been to prison. Yeah. Luckily, all of my illegal dealings did not land me in prison. Friends got in prison and they came out and they told me what happened. But I have this legit fear because I'm like, I know the type of person you'd have to become to survive in that kind of place. And I don't think I could take myself. I don't know if I can get there, and I don't know if I can handle it. But it's a legit fear to the point where I don't drink when I'm out, right, babe? Because that movie, Shot Caller.
Oh, my God. That movie scared me.
Because that can happen to anyone. Yes. If y'all haven't seen this movie, Shot Caller, look, this is the premise. This guy, who's a banker, him and his friend, banker, they both got money. They all go out to dinner. Picture this, because this is normal as hell. You go double dating. Y'all go in the same car. You have some drinks at dinner. You're just chilling. You're fine. You drink wine like it's normal. You're doing a normal thing. You're not trying to get drunk. You're not trying to do anything. You're just drinking some wine. And then you get in the car. And then all of a sudden, this guy accidentally runs a red light, gets in a car accident, and then his friend in the back gets killed. So initially, it's like, oh, man, you know, like, I didn't mean to. It was kind of like manslaughter initially because he was slightly above the level that you're allowed to be legally, you know, with alcohol. Slightly above. He wasn't drunk. He was just slightly above. And what happened was his boy's wife, who's used to having money.
Oh, no.
Is realizing now that she doesn't have no money no more.
Oh, no.
So now she has to come after him. And not pursue manslaughter, but pursue murder. So he was going in for manslaughter. So he was going to be in for a year and a half. That's what he was going off, 6 months for good behavior. Then he gets in there and finds out that she's going for more. On top of that, he gets thrown into a situation where now he has to pick a side because he's white. So he needs to go with the Aryan brothers. And in order for him to stay in there and to be protected by them, he's a newbie. So he has to earn their loyalty. So what does he have to go do? Kill some people.
Oh, dang.
So this normal banker, in order to survive, had to turn into a murderer. And then gets him in prison for even longer. But that is not like a far-fetched thing.
No.
He didn't do any. He's not a criminal. He just drunk one too many glasses of wine. Just one too many. And he was like point something above, but legally enough to get convicted. And the perfect storm of his homeboy's wife, who's like, what am I going to do? I got kids and I need money.
Wow.
I got to come after you. Because if it's me or you, I'm picking me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I won't ever.
It's not far-fetched.
I don't ever drink.
I have a friend who went to prison for, they were in a car accident and he had been drinking and his friend in the car died. But here's the thing. He was trying to help her. They were at this public place. A big fight broke out. His friend, this girl, she got stabbed. So he puts her in the car and is rushing her to the hospital because they don't want her to die. And while he's rushing her, he gets in an accident.
Oh, man.
And she didn't die. The other friend in the passenger who was going with him to the hospital, she died. So the whole point, like, he probably wouldn't have been driving drunk, but he was trying to get his friend to the hospital.
How long did he go in for? A
few years.
Damn. See, that crap is all too real, man. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, it scares me just thinking about it. It's legit a fear. Like, I'm legit afraid of it.
That's what I would always tell him, too. Babe, don't be texting and driving.
Yeah, that's why I'd be putting my phone down now. Because I'm like,
because you'd be texting.
I end up with a bunch of hardcore thugs. Hey, homie, what you in for?
Uh-huh.
Hey, I was texting, homie.
I was texting.
What a freaking loser.
I texted my wife. I was getting the eggs at Whole Foods.
Gosh, help me.
Organic eggs at Whole Foods.
Something so stupid. And you can legit go to prison for that. Yeah. I can't, man.
I was picking up the hummus. And
I'm so scared just thinking about it.
Yeah, were the pita chips worth it, Manny? Yeah.
Man, could you imagine? Oh my God.
One of my other fears is the fear of failure. And that one is something that definitely pops up in a lot of things that I do. Writing jokes. I write jokes for a living. And it's interesting how a fear of failure can subconsciously hold you back from doing something. And it'll look like second guessing yourself. I'll send a funny tweet and then I'm questioning, like, was that corny? Are people not going to think I'm corny? Was that stupid? Whatever. And it's like this fear of failing at being funny. Or I wrote this, sketch. Is it going to be well received? Are people going to like, am I going to fail at this? Am I going to fail at whatever it is? And that can hold you back from creating, like, oh, that's stupid. I'm not going to post it. Oh, that's stupid. I'm not going to write that script because you're afraid of failing. And I was lucky enough to, one of my first jokes that I wrote set me off the nail salon, right? One of the first jokes that I wrote. And then now I have the pressure of how do I beat the nail salon? I can't even beat myself. That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I beat myself? How do I beat the nail salon? And so every joke I'd write, I'd be like, that's not as funny as the nail salon. Like, nah, that's not as funny as the nail. No, that's not as funny. But I wasn't supposed to beat the nail salon. When I wrote the nail salon, I wasn't trying to beat something else. I was just being me and writing and creating and writing what I thought was funny, what made me laugh. But it's so interesting how I can still get caught up in that. But then, so after the nail salon, then it was Bon Quiqui. And then it was, oh, well, how do I beat Bon Quiqui? Like, those are two big things. Like, how do I beat it? And then after a while, I just stopped trying to beat it and just be me and put things out there. And still until this day, none of my jokes have gone incredibly viral since those two, the nail salon and Bon Quiqui. But I'm still very proud of what I'm putting out there. And if I had said, like, oh, it's not funnier than Bon Quiqui and not put it out there, I would just be stuck. Yeah. Right there, not doing anything.
No, yeah. I, you know, low-key confession, like, I was afraid of, like, it took me a while to get geared up for season 3. Like, I was so excited, but I was a little bit afraid of just, like not, you know, a failing. Even though to me, like, the people that are listening and that send us so many messages of, like, hope and thanks, somehow, some way, you look to the left, you look to the right, and you're just like, is it gonna last? Like, or will this thing fade out as well? You know? And thinking like that makes you not even wanna, like, start.
Yeah.
'Cause why start something to only see it die? I've already started so many things to watch them all die. And it's like, how much death can you freaking take in one life of dreaming? You know, I'm such a hopeless dreamer. But what keeps me, you know, what kept me going is just the idea that we're enjoying it and then people are enjoying it as well, even though there's still a fear of it failing. Mm-hmm. So weird.
Yeah. It's not weird, but I'll share that too, fear of failing. And I think, like, as on kind of in that journey, the thing that I'm having to deal with is obviously my ego. Mm. You know, an ego has its place in the right context because it can build some self-esteem, some confidence. But there's a point where ego starts getting in the way because it gets overinflated. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's like rooted because your identity is found in wrong things. And so most of my basketball career, like, my team always won the championship. Mm. Like, you go back to my high school, I still have all the records there. My high school record was 114 wins and 10 losses.
Oh, damn.
And that's something I'm super proud of because, like, my whole life, I'm like, I strive to be my best. I strive to make others better. And I loved having the label as a winner, which is good in an athletic career. But when that started bleeding over into just like my everyday life, there's a lot of just mundane days. There's a lot of just boring days. There's a lot of days where the grind is just long and it's like you're not really winning, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think for me, a lot of that fear of failure has to do with my ego of like most people who know me who will look at my life will be like, yeah, Brandon's got his shit together. He knows what he's doing, where he's going. Look at his wife. Like, he's living in LA. They're thriving. But there still is that fear of like failing because I'm like, I don't want to be now known as the guy who's not the winner.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like all of a sudden he's a guy who's like, oh, he's the broke guy. Or he's the guy I didn't work out for.
Yeah.
He's the guy that moved to LA with all these big dreams. And now it hasn't panned out in 5 years. And so look it, he's moving back with mom and dad because they don't have anything.
Yeah.
You know? So that fear is actually real. And it's weird because I go on this like weird place between that of like, I think part of that fear is healthy because it's like something that you're competing against or striving against to make sure like, hey, I don't want to fail. So let me do all the work that I can to make sure that I don't put myself in that position.
Yeah.
But the unhealthy part of that fear for me is one, it's focusing on the appearance of what my life is actually and not the substance of it.
Mm.
But then two, it gets in the way when I am no longer taking risks. We're taking what I would call leaps of faith.
Yeah.
And that's the part where, like, man, I struggle with at times, you know? And I, like, try and coach myself or teach myself, like, when you're scared, just go do it, you know?
You have to.
You have to.
Well, that brings the point. That brings the point because the title of this podcast is How to Overcome the Fear or how do you deal with fear? So in these places that we've already set, okay, so fear of going broke, fear of ending up in prison, fear of failing.
Fear of death.
Fear of death.
Abandonment.
What did you do or are actively doing to overcome that fear?
So for me, like with joke writing and fear of failure and creating, in order to stare failure in the face and say that you can't have me, you have to get close enough for it to hear you. So you have to try. You have to start writing. You have to take that class. Whatever it is that you're dreaming of and you're wanting to do, you have to get close to failure. Mm. And I thought I turned it off. Okay. You have to get close to failure. You have to try and put it out there. And then maybe you do fail and then you'll learn from that failure. And maybe you won't. And maybe you'll succeed. And then next thing you know, you have a new hour special. And you wouldn't have had that if you stayed stuck.
Mm-hmm. So you just do.
Keep trying. Keep doing. Don't stay stuck. Whatever you do, don't stay stuck.
I agree. That's what this podcast is. It's literally the biggest act of faith. Because what I do, I went and bought more crap. I went and got more cameras, a whole system of how to run the cameras, spent a couple more G's. And it's like, nah, we're not making money on it yet. But something about it, I thoroughly enjoy. And I feel that people, whoever's listening, is worth it. It's worth the risk. Because whoever we're helping to me is worth it. That I think failure, yeah. Anytime I fear failure, I try. Mm-hmm. I have to try. I have to. It's not even a thing. I mean, we're even doing merch. That's how far in we're going. Mm-hmm. We got merch now. It's going all in because I can't do anything half-assed. It's like, it's just not in me. I've been scared my whole career. Every time I would get on stage, I was scared. Every time I would do a show, I was scared. Always scared. But I wasn't afraid of the fear. It was when the fear took over and stopped me from getting on stage. If ever that fear just stopped me from stepping on that stage, then that's when I knew it's time to hang it up. But
one thing, actually, there's two things for me. But there's one thing I remember I was telling my friend who I was like, at this point, I'm no longer convincing to move to LA. But I was telling him, I'm like, you got to take the jump, man. And it was so weird because sometimes I'll have these, and you could call me weird moments, but I'm such a like forward thinker, you know, that I imagine someday me having a conversation with my son. Okay. Hopefully I'm gonna have a son. That'd be awesome. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's of age and he's about to kind of go and embark on his adventure of life, you know? And I just visualize me having this conversation with my future son. And of course, I'm going to be at a much different place in life. Who knows what that looks like? And me having to sit down and be honest with him about how I lived my life. And I would hate to sit there on that day having this conversation with my son and said, you know what, man? I had some chances to take some risks, but your dad was scared. Hmm. I played it safe. I settled. I didn't want to fail, so therefore I didn't try. Wow. And like, I don't know, like I just, if I think about having the conversation, that kind of hurts me to think like how I chose to live my life would be the conversation, that is how the conversation would go with him. Because to me, like obviously now everything is legacy. So I don't want the legacy that I leave behind for whoever I influence in my lifetime to be that one of fear.
Yeah.
Because honestly, no one will ever be influenced if I don't actually take risk or if I take a leap of faith in anything that I do. And then I think I realize the other thing too is for me having to reframe what fear actually is. Fear is just the unknown.
Yeah.
So maybe on this edge of me, this unknown, it's a fear, but maybe there's actually something really great on that other side. For probably the first, I'd say 16, I started having dreams when I was really young, like in the nighttime, you know? And I remember like very symbolic, all these sorts of things, grand things. But I had a reoccurring dream in my life from about age 5 all the way until about 17, 18. And in this dream, what would happen is I would be in these different settings, whether I was in some metropolitan city, I'm out in the rural countryside, whatever it is, I would always have this figure behind me chasing me. And I remember in the dream being so scared that I would just run to these different places and hide in my dream world. And during this time, I never actually saw what was behind me. Like I was just so scared that I would just run and find like hiding spot. But wherever I would come and this thing would come and find me. And right before I turn around to see what it was, I'd wake myself up and pull myself out of the dream.
Wow.
And I'd have this dream every single year for about 12, 13 years.
Dang. Oh,
and again, it was weird because I don't even know what that necessarily was, but I think it was fear. Like, I think it was me in my subconscious, deep somewhere in my spirit person was running away from fear. And so when I was 18, I remember this lady, I told her about it. It was some weird like dream event. So we're like sharing dreams and they're telling you how to interpret dreams and stuff. So I stood up in the crowd and I just shared what I just shared. And she goes, "Hey, next time that dream happens, turn around and see what it is." It was like so like blunt. And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. You know,
I am going to turn around next time.
And so... Yeah, so that last time I remember having this dream and it was so weird. Like it was this huge like climatic moment where I'm in the dream and I feel this figure behind me and I finally decided I'm going to turn around and see what it is. And I turned around and see what it was and it was the shadow and the shadow disappeared as soon as I saw it. And I never had that dream again.
Shoot.
And it's always been this weird thing inside of me where I'm like, whatever that fear is, I can't run away from it. because it'll continue to haunt me until I address it.
Yeah.
Ooh, come through.
And
come through.
When you address it, it's like I realized, oh my God, I have courage. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, this doesn't have to completely ruin my life every single day. Oh my God, like I can make it go away.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing with all these unknowns. Like I think a lot of these fears that we overcome, we start to see things in ourselves that we never knew. And that's the unknown. That's like fears kind of give you this weird place at the edge of the table that you get to go to and expand the table in some ways, you know?
Dude, that my
I love that.
I remember a story, remember, babe, when my first tour back from after Blanca leaving the group and it was just me. My first tour back, I remember it was a dry season and I was like, man, I'm not touring. And I only jumped back into this because I felt like God was telling me to do it. So I'm just like, man, what am I going to do? Then I get a call from these guys, my homies, Big Daddy Weave, and they're like, come tour with us. And Big Daddy Weave, those are my homies, but it's like four, you know, middle-aged white guys, like not even close to what I do. And the guy opening is another middle-aged bald white guy. And I'm like, so you want me to come and be in between these two worship type singers? And I was just like, man. But something in me was like, I was afraid of not being good enough because it was just me. And if I failed, it's on me. Mm. Like no one else, we can't look at each other and be like, what did we do, guys? It was solely on me. And so the deal was tough. It was like, I'm going to give you $1,500 a show. And at this point, I have four people in a band. I have drums, bass, guitar, other girl singer, and a sound guy. So it's five of us. So with $1,500 per show, I had to pay all of them, and we had to get our own bus. So we got like a Mercedes Sprinter van. I was in debt. My business manager goes, hey, before you even start this tour, you're in debt $30,000. Are you sure you want to do this tour? And I was like, you know what? At some point, I have to either put up when it comes to faith, or I have to just shut up. Like, I'm either going to believe, or I'm going to get the hell out of this thing that we call faith in God, because it doesn't make sense to be in here like half-assing your relationship with God. Like, I believe you in some areas, and in some areas I'm just scared. I was like, screw this. If I go broke, I go broke. Let's do it. Let's run it, because I'm only here for people and for God. So screw it. And they were like, against all them saying, you should not do this. You 30,000. Before you even set foot on that bus, you're 30 grand in debt. I was like, let's do it. God will come through.
Wow.
Yo. And mind you, the shows were not big shows. It was anywhere between 500 to like 3,000 people. And it was not my crowd.
Yeah.
And when I tell you, we went out and I netted 80 grand when it was all said and done.
Wow.
Netted 80 grand. I've done arena tours that I didn't net 80 grand.
You're talking about merchandise.
Merchandise. Because that was the only place I could make money at.
Yeah.
All my other stuff went to pay everyone. So it was like, everyone else is going to get paid. Yeah. Everyone will get paid except for Manny. And I netted 80 grand. And that's when I was like, you see, I have to go. I can. And then they asked me to do it again. This time they paid me less money, but got me on a bus. But I only got paid $1,000 this time. And I went and I netted another 50 grand. That year I made more money than any year in Group One's history.
Wow.
And I had all the odds stacked against me. But it's because I saw the fear and I stepped into it. And I was like, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, granted, I could have gone broke.
Yeah.
But at some point it was like, I'm either going to like live it instead of just talking it, or just get out of the race. Just get out and just be like, whatever. I don't believe you, God. I don't believe you can do it. I don't have no faith. That's it. That was literally where I was at in my life. And I'm glad, because that's what this year is all about. This year for me and Ange is about faith. Our whole life is literally about, all right, we trust God. Somehow, some way, we trust God.
One thing I wanted to say about your dream that you were having, because you mentioned, you know, if you would just turn around and address it and address the fear, so it didn't have power over you anymore. But I also think it's interesting that it was just a shadow. It wasn't even this big, huge monster. Mm-hmm. Like so many times the fears in our lives that are keeping us stuck is really just a shadow. It's not even the real thing that you think it is. And if we would address it, we will see that we made it up in our head. That fear that almost kept you stuck, kept you from doing the tour, kept you from pursuing whatever it is.
Writing the joke. Starting the business.
Yeah.
Moving to whatever city it is that you feel like you gotta.
Exactly. Like that fear could just be this little shadow that you made up in your head.
That's a scary thought. Well, look, man.
Now you're afraid of the pretend shadow. Now
I'm afraid of pretend shadows. Look, man, if you guys are out there, man, hey, we, and you have a fear that you would like to speak out. Because usually it's the speaking of it, like actually telling somebody.
Addressing it.
Yeah.
And you don't have nobody to talk to, man, hit us up on the DM. Literally hit us up on the DM.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk, chat with you, encourage, pray, whatever it is that you guys need. It would be an absolute honor for you guys to do that. Hey, so since it is season 3, we have Step Up and Sting. Like I said, we do have merch. Merch is available. All you got to do is go to my website.
Yeah.
ManuelReyes.com.
It's your full name,
ManuelReyes.com. You know what I'm saying? Go there.
I'm going to have to check it out.
Get some merch.
Sounds good.
Check it out. See if you like it.
I'm going to get it on my phone.
We have merch. The music is still going out, so check out the music. Follow us on Instagram. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. Smash that button.
Smash that like button.
Smash that button. Tell your, hey, look, we live and die by the shares. If you guys don't share to new people, we won't ever grow. So we literally... We literally need your help. If you feel like this is good, if you think it sucks, then don't tell anybody and just keep it to yourself. But if you think it's good, share it, and we will be most appreciative. We're doing our first live gig here in LA for season 3 with Be Real's Church, and that's in March, right?
Yeah, last week of March.
March, yeah. So this will probably be one of the first ones that I let out, so I'm going to be okay with this.
Okay. I was like, you're getting real specific right now.
No, I'm going to make this one of the first ones because I'm saying March 8th. March, what's the date? We'll let y'all know. Follow us on Instagram. We'll let y'all know.
Last Thursday night of
last
March.
Last Thursday night of March, yeah.
So I believe that's the 27th. I could, nope, 26th.
Yeah.
I thought it was the 16th, but okay.
Yeah. No, we're going to let you know. We're going to get that, I promise. If you're in LA, it's open to the public, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing a cool pod. I want you guys to come. Come and check it out. And hopefully we'll do another live event. I want to do another live event this year that we put on.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
I think LA, California is kind of like...
Let us know where we should do this live event.
Yeah, because we would need at least 50 people to show up.
That's true.
Yeah, let us know. Hit us in the DMs. Hit us in... where else? That's it, right? The Instagram
comments.
DM?
Comments,
oh, and leave a comment, too.
Comment or DMs. We literally look at every message that comes in.
Let us know where we should do a live event. California, Texas, New York.
Florida, wherever.
Wherever. Let us know, and we'll come and do a live event.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for listening. We love you. We hope that in some way us being vulnerable has helped you with your fear and that you are not alone in it all. So we appreciate you. Hey, we hope that you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours. Cheers.
Cheers.
We got the world on our shoulders. Can we stand the pressure? We got the world on our shoulders. Feels like it's now or never. Can we stand the pressure?
We feel the tension, it's building. Hard to explain what we're feeling. It's hard moving past all the things that have happened when we just can't find any reasons. The struggle is real, it's not fiction. And pain has become our addiction. So we keep on fighting to right all the wrongs so that we can find what we've been missing.
We rise, when they fall,
and we stand
through it all. We got the world on our shoulders. Can we stand the pressure? We got the world on our shoulders. Feels like it's now or never. Can we stand the pressure? Can we stand the pressure?
Yeah. If we could get past all our demons and realize we have a chance to become more than we ever could dream, and it seems like it's us who is stopping us from standing up under the pressure, facing the pain and the pleasure. If hope is something we can measure, then let's put it all on the line. It's forever. 'Cause we rise when they fall, and we stand through it all. We got the world on our shoulders. Can we stand the pressure? We got the world on our shoulders. Feels like it's now or never. Can we stand the pressure? Making diamonds from the dirt, moving on when it hurts, finding reasons to live when our hearts wanna give in. Making diamonds from the dirt, moving on when it hurts, finding reasons to live when our hearts wanna give in. We got the world on our shoulders. Can we stand the pressure? We got the world on our shoulders. Feels like it's now or never. Can we stand the pressure? Stand.